Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to History Dweebs. I am Tim. Welcome to the podcast where we take a lighthearted look at the dark side of history. I'm joined, as always, by my good friend, Brandy. Brandy, are you there?
Good morning.
And my good friend, Charles. Charles, are you there?
I'm here, Timmy. I'm here like always, Timmy. I'm here. I'm prepared. Shit.
And you are, you, Charles, are very dependable.
I'm very reliable, yes. I'm nothing if not reliable, Timmy.
Just what I was thinking.
The title of our podcast today is Side by Side, The Death of Bonnie and Clyde. Two of the most famous criminals in American history. We're going to talk about that. Before we do, I should mention that we use adult language on this podcast.
Goddamn right,
and
we
so,
do.
So if foul language offends you, then we would suggest that you check out one of the other fine podcasts out there, like Already Gone with our good friend Nina, and also They Walk Among Us with our good friend Ben and Rosanna.
Except don't become friends with Nina.
Because, why is that, Charles?
Because then you'll hear foul language and adult content.
Yeah, but she doesn't do it on her show. She's very, very professional.
But you know what? She's not the goody two-shoes she makes herself out to be, Timmy. I'm just calling out right here. Right now.
Oh, my God.
So we're doing we got a podcast war.
Yeah, that's right. It's going to be the Midwest versus the South. You always have the East Coast and the West Coast. But this is the Midwest versus the South. She pretends to be a goody two-shoes, and I've heard her cuss, Timmy.
You've heard her swear.
I've seen her drink alcohol, Timmy. I've seen her.
We've all seen that.
Yeah, she's...
She does post a lot of alcoholic drinks and things on her Facebook page.
Oh, okay, well...
She's allowed.
I'm just saying,
she's
an adult.
Got a wee bit of a sailor's mouth on it, Timmy. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
And it seems like Colonel, she has a drinking problem, wouldn't you say?
Now I'm not a counselor. I'm not a counselor, but right. She does enjoy the devil's brew, Timmy.
Yeah, she seems to. She seems to, and we don't condone that, of course.
We don't
on this podcast.
Leave that woman alone. I'm drinking now. Let's go.
All right. So we're going to do something different this time. Well, let me introduce the panel, and then we'll talk about it. I am happy to introduce my co-host, who is known throughout the land as Brandy the Benevolent, Her Majesty Queen Brandy the First. Brandy, how are you, if at all?
I'm troubled, Timmy, but we'll get into all that. But everything's good, and, we're still dealing with the, pandemic day 1087, it feels like, and working from home and with all of the fun stuff that entails because people are here with me and...
Are you wearing a mask for this podcast? Because we do require a mask.
I am not at this time. But I will tell you that I had to take Noah out the other day to get a prescription from Target or whatever, and he and I were both wearing masks, but he was appalled at the number of people that were not wearing masks, and God love his heart, did not hesitate to point it out that they were not wearing masks and that was very dangerous. So
he was shaming them.
It was a short trip. Yeah, a little bit. It was a short trip to Target. We were in and out of there, probably the fastest I've ever been in and out of a Target.
Grabbed him by the arm and just dragged him out
the
door.
Yeah, just come. I know. They're not wearing. I know, buddy. I know. I got it. So yeah, it was. It's the adventure. But, you know, we're on automatic up here, Timmy. So how is Kentucky, if at all?
Kentucky is fine. You know, here in the bluegrass state, the Commonwealth, I am doing well and I'm staying safe. I'm social distancing, which is kind of what I do.
Yeah, it's kind of your thing.
Mm-hmm.
The more important question, I guess, is how is Dottie?
She's fine. She's social distancing. She's wearing a mask and she is doing fine.
Does she have enough Twinkies to last her, or did you forget?
No, I just ordered, you know, this Instacart thing is like, it's the greatest thing ever. You can just order anything, and it appears at your door, so.
It's a bit of a scam, though, Timmy. I realized Instacart, I figured out their business model, Timmy.
Okay.
So if Kroger, let's say you have a penchant for Keebler fudge sticks, Timmy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you look
not that we would eat anything so sugary, but go ahead, Colonel.
And you look on Instacart and it says the price is $2.99. Uh-huh. But Kroger might have them on sale for $1.99 that week. But you pay full price on Instacart. They don't give you the discount, Timmy. They don't give you the discount. And you don't get
Charles, that's not true. I get a lot of things on sale from Instacart.
So they give you the sale price?
Saying that Chuck's full of shit and doesn't know what he's talking about? What you're saying?
I don't want to get sued by Instacart because, yeah, I ordered a few minutes ago and I got sold.
I am shocked that Charles would speak about something that he doesn't know anything about.
My boys told me this and they, I believe they're more technologically savvy than us, Timmy. But they said that if you have hot dogs that get one, buy one, get one free, you don't necessarily get the free one, Timmy.
You think they're taking your hot dogs?
I believe they're taking my extra package of hot dogs, Timmy.
Let me introduce a man who, Brandy, really needs no introduction. He's a man who is, you know, we live in troubled times, Brandy, and our listeners especially, but many others look to this man as an oasis in the desert of despair. He's a moral compass. He's been described as the most dangerous man in podcasting today.
By no one.
And he has you have to tell us, Charles, about it. You have a new podcast. I don't know if you're ready to reveal that, but
it's not so.
I will out you anyway. The very honorable, the Reverend Colonel Charles Beauregard, best-selling author, Brandy. Chuck Hawkwaters III. How are you today, Colonel, if at all?
I'm not good, Timmy. I'm not good.
What's wrong, Charles?
Timmy,
nobody cares.
22 years ago, Timmy, I took an old kitchen and I gutted it top to bottom, Timmy. Cabinets, floors. I built the cabinets myself, Timmy. Built the cabinets myself. Routed out the edges, sanded them, polyurethaned them, stained them.
Right. Yeah. Come on.
Everything, Timmy.
Everything.
And I'm doing it again now. I just put a new floor in there yesterday. The cabinets.
Well, I didn't know. 22 years ago, and you're doing
my
it
cabinets, Timmy, that I spent all that time lovingly staining and sanding and routing and trimming out the edges, Timmy, have been painted over. It's a sin, really. It's a sin.
Oh, my God.
What is it, how does it look, Colonel?
I don't know. It looks like a kitchen to me, Timmy. But yesterday I had to crawl around on my knees and put a new floor because 21 years ago I tore up a floor and put a ceramic tile floor in my kitchen, and apparently ceramic tile is no longer hip, so I had to tear up the ceramic tile and put a new floor down, Timmy.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah. Did you have to get rid? Did you have to get rid of all your lava lamps and stuff like that too?
I did. I'm not getting rid of my bell bottoms.
All the shag carpeting.
Yeah.
Did you get rid of the shag?
I did. They will take my bell bottoms when they pry them from my cold dead hands, Timmy. But I'm fine with all that, except, you know, I think back and I was 34 years old when I did that, Timmy. A 34-year-old man crawling around on the floor and doing all that work is different than a 56-year-old man crawling around on the floor doing all that work.
Well, just wait until you're 78 and you have to do it again.
I know. It hurts, Timmy. I'm hurting, Timmy. I'm physically hurting, and it just brings a tear to my eye because those cabinets were custom made for this.
Oh, my
kitchen.
God, you just fucking painted them. They're still custom made. Jesus, fuck.
You don't take beautiful oak and cover
unless
it up with
you're
paint.
Unless you're going to stick your dick in one of those cabinets, I don't give a fuck about them cabinets. You just painted them. They're fine. They're still lovingly put together and hung up. They just needed a fresh coat of paint. Fucking hell.
You don't paint over You don't paint over a beautiful... Oh, yeah. Apparently, she's anti-wood, Timmy. She doesn't respect wood.
That.
I don't know. She says she's pro wood.
She's pro wood depending on how her coursework is going, Timmy.
And well, you know,
Bigger first world problem than I had to paint the cabinets that I put up.
I'm not talking about paint.
And it was terrible, and I'm so sad, and I hurt.
Okay, I'm not going to ask you this question about being on
your
knees.
Was your local Starbucks closed,
but
too?
Have you spent an entire day on your knees, devil? Have you ever let your grades drop that bad that you had to spend an entire day on a hard surface on your knees?
Well, for our new listeners that might not get that reference, Colonel, we're talking, of course, about her, Brandy's...
illicit?
I don't want to judge, but she had a encounter with her economics professor.
This is why I never tell you guys fucking anything, because we've been going on this for 4 years now.
Yeah.
I thought everybody knew.
Jesus Christ.
Well, it's part of your past. You need to embrace it.
I'm over it. I don't know why you all aren't.
All right, so...
I mean, my God.
That poor professor, he was me too'd, Timmy. He was me too'd by the devil.
Well, she got a C-plus out of it, so...
I know.
Oh, my God.
And it had to take a while because he was, like 78 years old or something?
No.
How old was he, Brandy?
He was in his 30s.
We don't approve, devil. We don't approve.
No.
Oh, I didn't remember the last time I gave a shit about that. So there's that.
All right.
Can we move on?
Yes, we're gonna do something a little bit different today before we get into the story, because we do usually banter quite a bit, but today we're gonna address something. There's a lot of things going on in the world right now. Of course, we have the pandemic going on. This weekend, there's been protests around the country. And we're going to just spend a few minutes talking about it because we don't want to totally ignore it. And so if you don't want to hear us discuss the events that's going on, then please just fast forward for about 10 minutes and you'll get into the story. But it's a difficult time, in our country. So, like I said, we didn't want to ignore it, and we wanted to discuss it. So I'm going to start by asking Brandy her impressions of the recent events.
You know, it's hard. It's almost unfathomable that in 2020 we're still dealing with these issues of police brutality and you know, racism, and it's just it's fascinating to me that this wound this wound cannot heal. And I know for me personally, I was appalled at the events in Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't wrap my head around what makes you think that what you're doing is okay. What made you think that, you know, even if you were going to stop somebody and make this citizen's arrest, and you know you're nothing but the good guys, why do you take a gun with you to do that? Why do you need a gun? You call the police and you wait for them to get there. You don't hold somebody against their will. You don't, you know, you certainly don't pull out a gun. That was very hard. That was very hard for me. And then I watched a murder on television, an actual murder. You heard a gentleman's last words. You watched him take some of his last breaths. And I don't understand how anybody can look at that and say that that was not excessive, that that wasn't murder. And I can't believe that. I can't believe that there have not been more arrests. I mean, thank you. You arrested the officer that sat on this guy's neck for maybe even unknowingly trying to pass a counterfeit $20 bill. Give me a fucking break. You don't have anybody else to go catch except for this poor guy.
Yeah, even the charge was what? Manslaughter.
Well, that was murder three. What the fuck is murder three?
And I will tell you, it was almost certainly unwittingly, because printing a $20 bill in your basement is not something that the average person can do. So
no, I mean, he's probably, you know, gotten it as change from something and went to go spend it at the store. And they pull him out of the car. You got nothing better to do than go after, chase some guy down over a counterfeit 20, yank him out of his car and sit on his neck. He wasn't resisting. He didn't know what the fuck was going on.
And unless something's changed, and I'll let you keep going here, but unless something's changed, that actually happened to me before. I went to the store and I had just gone to the money machine, and this is back before you could swipe your card in and use it. You know, it's when you had cash or used a check, right?
You had to pay cash, yeah.
And when the woman used the little marker on the 20, it was a counterfeit 20. And what the woman said, she called the manager over, and the manager said, I have to take the $20 bill. We'll be calling the police. Somebody will be in touch with you. I'm very sorry. And I said, okay. And, you know, I mean, I was a little aggravated that they took my, you know, that I lost it. But I had just gotten it out of an ATM machine. I paid it, and I went on my way. And about 2 weeks later, I got a call. And I talked to a Secret Service agent, and he wanted to know, basically it was, you know, a trace and, you know, trying to figure out where this came from. And it was back when Provident Bank was a bank here in Cincinnati, and they gave me my $20 back because I, you know, got it from the money machine. And then I signed an affidavit. You know, I talked to this agent, and then he came to my house and with an affidavit saying that this is the events, and I signed it, and that was it. That was it. I mean, you know what I mean? That was the incident. Nobody, the police didn't come to the store. The police didn't.
Right.
They took my $20 bill and said, somebody will be in touch with you. I'm sorry. And I was mad because I lost $20. But that was the incident. Now, I'm not understanding what caused that. But I'm sorry. I did not mean to interrupt.
Well, no. I just, you know, you know, we watched all this. We watched all this unfold. We watched it over and over on the news. And we watched it, you know. And I think that... and I think two things. I think a lot more than that. But I think, first of all, that as a society, I think as a society as a whole, I believe that when this becomes something that we are complacent with, I think we've really entered some Hunger Games type shit territory. And, you know, we've joked about it before, we've done this, but it's starting to become very, very real now. And I find that. And I think that as, you know, the black community, they need to be mad. They should be mad. And I know they've been mad for a long time and it's justified. But this, you know, I don't have to worry when my son goes out and delivers DoorDash or when my son is, you know, caught speeding or whatever. I don't worry that he's going to get shot. That's not something that's ever been a worry for me. I worried that he'd go to jail because he's a jackass, but I've never worried that he'd be shot. And I can't imagine as a mother having to worry not just about your young children, you know, getting into trouble and getting shot over something stupid, but your grown babies getting shot for nothing, getting killed for nothing. Having to be afraid of the people that are supposed to help you. And that is my privilege. And I know that I'm going to screw this up, and I know that I may say the wrong thing, but I, you know, we have this discussion about race. Some of it, you know, has to do with where we work and the jobs that the three of us do. That, you know, we come across this kind of stuff a lot, but I just kind of, I cannot imagine. And I think it's time for all of us collectively as a society to stand up and say, it's not okay. It's not okay for police to continue to murder our citizens in the street. It's not okay for people to run down Asian Americans in the street because they think that they brought the coronavirus. You know, it's not okay for trans people or gay people to constantly feel brutalized and victimized. And I think that when we stop taking care of some of the vulnerable groups in our society, I think we face a collapse. And unless we work all together, and unless we address it all together, I think we're going to continue to see this. And it's I can't imagine what that's like for my black friends to have to. That's something that they deal with every single day. And I can't imagine having that burden.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that you have to worry about your kids leaving the house. But, I mean, hell, the lady in Louisville, she was killed in her own home.
Yeah.
I know. Why are you serving a no-knock warrant on something squirrely? And they didn't even find anything. You know, it was something dumb. What the hell? I don't understand why all of a sudden there are... Well, and it's not all of a sudden. I say that, and it's not. I think with cell phone cameras and things like that, it's come more to the forefront. But I think that people of color, all people of color, have dealt with a lot of this stuff for years and years and years, is that there are two sets of rules. Because I can bet you that if I passed, I tried to pass a counterfeit bill, they're not yanking me out of my car. And the thing too that pissed me off is, you know, they released his autopsy, or they released part of his autopsy or whatever, and they cited all these underlying conditions, and, you know, they're going to wait for the toxicology to come back. I don't understand. No. The man died because his airway was cut off because a white police officer thought it was okay to put his knee on that man's neck. And he thought it was okay to do it over 2 minutes after the man had been passed out. He continued to do it. And that goes into, you're not trying to restrain him. That goes into the cruelty is the point. That's the point. And I was raised by Reagan Republicans. I was raised with police officers in my home every day. My dad is a police officer. I have known more police officers than I can count. And some of them are okay, and some of them are not. And that is the same with every group. But you have to go with this systemic change. And I have seen lately that, you know, you have police officers that are joining in the protests. And I think that's great. I think it's wonderful that there are people that recognize that you have these issues. But I don't, you know, is it too late? Is it too much to ask that, you know, that we all should be in the streets? We all should be out there demanding change from our government, demanding change for, you know, for all of this, for this, you know, these people are supposed to keep all of us safe. No matter who you are supposed to be taken into custody. You are supposed to be protected. And when those people are gone, what do you have? You have bullshit, you have anarchy, and you have rioting because people are frustrated. People are unemployed right now. We're in the middle of a fucking pandemic. And you think, you know, and you think that detaining this guy with your foot on his neck, with your knee on his neck, you think detaining this jogger with a shotgun, you think those things are good ideas? You think that that is what the country needs? Fuck off. Treat each other with some fucking respect and some goddamn dignity. Treat everybody that you see. Not all cops are bad. Not all cops are great, clearly. But, you know, everybody's just trying to fucking get along. We don't, you know, this is not on us. This is not on, this is on the systemic flaws in our criminal justice system that need changed, and somebody needs to fucking step up. Somebody needs to hold people accountable. Somebody needs to take care of this. And if it has to be us, then it has to be us. And we need to vote, and we need to do whatever. But fucking Christ, people. You know, we watched a murder on TV.
It was disturbing. I talked to Logan. Me and Logan were talking about this yesterday. And I said that when you watch this and you are like me, you're 56 years old and you're white and you watch this and you're just enraged by the entire thing. You're just completely enraged by the entire thing. And now, again, I'm a 56 year old white man. Now imagine the rage that must be coming from a young African American man who, you know, we all live in our own little bubbles, right? We don't live. Yeah. I don't live in that bubble. And this, you know, hypothetical 30-year-old, 25-year-old young man has to live in that bubble every day. Can you imagine the rage that he's carried from other incidents and other incidents and other incidents? And now you have this on top of everything. So you, you just, I just can't imagine the intent. Because I know this, I've said this, you know, people talk about the damage or whatever. I know had I had to watch that video and that were my brother, I'd burn down every goddamn building in the street. I mean, they would not be able to hide from me, you know, so.
To get attention, to get your point across.
No, just to get there. Yeah, yeah. If I had to burn down, I don't give a fuck what I burned down. Somebody would pay for it. And, you know, it brings me back. You know, you were talking about those guys that were making the citizen's arrest. And, you know, I told you earlier this year I had to make a citizen's arrest myself when I was carjacked or attempted carjacking. And, right. You know, I had so many people ask me, you know, because I have a concealed carry. And so many people ask me, did you have your gun with you? And I thought, well, why the fuck was I going to shoot him? You know what I mean? I could just wrestle him down to, I mean, what is our first impulse right. to kill somebody? I don't want to kill somebody over that. And, no. and it's, and you know, one thing that's happened, we've had a little bit of trouble in our city. But you remember, you know, you go back and it ended with the Timothy Thomas thing. And we'd had a string of, I think we had 15 in a row, police shootings, and they were all younger black men. And,
yeah, this was in 2000, I think.
2001.
And the Department of Justice came in and they oversaw the Cincinnati Police Department. And they found out that a lot of this, you know, obviously you get a large group of people, you're going to have some that are racist. But a good part of it was training. And Cincinnati Police have gone through so, they train constantly on diffusing situations, on things like that, that we are now looked to as a model police force, you know, which is not to say they're perfect, but there's a way to handle things. And you know, luckily we have here in Cincinnati, we don't run into that. And you also mentioned the autopsy. I thought it was really, really interesting that they said the man had COPD, an underlying issue. And matters. I thought, well, it's like COVID. Would he be walking around today had he not? Okay, COPD, and he got COVID and died. Well, it wasn't the COPD that killed him. It was the COVID. It wasn't the COPD that killed this man. It was the neck on his goddamn throat.
Yeah, the excuse that he had pre-existing conditions is just bullshit. In law, in civil law, in tort cases, you take your victim as you find him. So if someone has a heart problem and you do something to make them have a heart attack,
right.
You're liable. You know, you're liable for that.
But I just thought, why are we having all these other discussions? Why are we having all these other discussions, you know, about the looting? You know, and to me, the looters, you know, they're rookies, Timmy. They're rookies. That's what I'm going to say about these looters.
They're a very small percentage.
Well, if you want to be a looter, Timmy, what you do is you get yourself a suit and you go to work on Wall Street and you can loot a whole goddamn country. And nobody says anything about you, you know, instead of just looting a Target and getting, you know, some sheets or whatever the hell it is. I mean, did you see this kind of outrage when our country was looted? And that's what it really was in 2009. Our country was looted by bankers and nobody cared about that. But I do think here is what I think is. I look at millennials and I look at younger people and I do see a completely different attitude. I see a completely different intolerance for that in kind of intolerance. They don't tolerate racism well. You know, people make fun of them about being snowflakes, about being whatever. But the reality is they have a better attitude. They have a better perspective on things like this than
yeah.
The older,
not only race but sexual orientation and
right.
And
I do believe that there's hope that there's going to be better. But when you look back, Timmy, and I like the Ava Brothers, and they had a song, and it's got a lyric in it. You look back, slavery was 150 years ago, Timmy. And the average lifespan is 75 years old. We're only two lifespans away from slavery. You know, it's not like it's an abstract thing, yeah. You know, that happened.
Not even.
The Roman Empire, I mean, you know.
And not, and only one lifetime span from Jim Crow.
Jim Crow, I mean, right.
I think I've mentioned before, when I was a kid, there was a movie theater in my town, and they still had the sign. Now, they wasn't enforcing segregation. But they still had the sign, you know, a sign in their in the movie theater that pointed to the balcony, and it says blacks, you know,
right.
and white only, you know, water fountain. Mm. I mean, they wasn't enforcing it in 1968-69 because it was illegal at that point. But I mean, it's not that long ago that right. It was, you know, it was the law.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, is that many of us that are alive today were raised with that. You know, it's not, mm-hmm. it's not the things of bygone days. You know, it's something that was still in our lifetime.
Sure.
And it's gonna take effort to wash it away, but I do really, you know, I really get, and I had to say to a woman who I did not know, it was on Facebook, when she said two wrongs don't make a right. And I said, you know, I don't know you. I only know you from your statement. From your statement, you're ignorant. You know, you're just plain ignorant. I said, let me tell you what a wrong is. A wrong is you walk into a store, you steal a candy bar, you go outside, and you don't pay for it. That's wrong. Yeah, that's a wrong. You put your knee on somebody's neck, put your hand in your pocket, and just coldly and callously wait for them to die. That's not a wrong. That's an inhumanity. That's a crime against humanity.
It's like a tragedy.
Yeah, it's a...
Yeah.
That's not a wrong. You know, you can't conflate these two things into the same thing.
Right.
And even people that today, you know, say, well, it shouldn't have happened, but, you know, don't say but.
No.
Just say it shouldn't have happened. Because you can, there's consequences to things, and the consequences that we're living with right now are this, is that, you know, we have a large segment of our society feel like they have been pushed absolutely beyond a breaking point. And you know, you don't want to characterize it because so many, you know, in Cincinnati last night, we had so many all throughout the day, very, very peaceful protests. You know, large groups of people walking down the streets and, you know, going to District 1, and they had no problems. And then later on that night, when they had it on the news, and I pointed this out to Logan, I said, look at the people screaming at the police and doing whatever, and the people that on Facebook, they're going to say, except for these people. The people were all white. They were all white. So it was strange to me that, but you know, I don't know what. Well, the answer's easy. You know, be human. You know, it's not that goddamn hard. But that's what. But apparently, it is too hard.
Well, and I can't imagine, like, for myself, sitting watching, you know, both those incidents that were caught on camera or whatever, and watching that happen, you're right. I mean, you get filled with so much rage because you're watching people that, you know, first of all, if a citizen tries to intervene, they're going to get hurt.
Well,
but then you have all these other police officers that are not stopping it.
Right. And that's a true crime. I mean,
raging. Yeah. And it gives you such a feeling of hopelessness and of, you know, helplessness. And, you know, people don't like to feel those things. And to have to feel that all the time, every time you step out your door, every time you, not even if you have to step out your door, to just feel that way. Is unfathomable to me. And so I guess the point, you know, that of us kind of talking about it, and was because I didn't want to ignore it. I know that there are so many other factors that go into all of this that we don't have time to get into and all that, but I wanted to address it because I think that it's incumbent upon all of us to make a change so that people in our society don't have to feel marginalized or hopeless or helpless or anything like that. I think that it's incumbent upon all of us to make this change. And for those that don't want to change, they get left behind. They're the ones that need to be they are the ones that need to be marginalized. They are the ones that need to be that breed that don't want change, that don't want progress, that don't want that breed needs to fade away. And we need to really move forward in this country as a civilized society and civilized for everyone and not just the people that look like us or act like us. Is what I think. And Chuck sounds like he's left the building, so it doesn't matter. But that was kind of all I wanted to say. And like I said, I know that I probably have screwed some things up, and I know that, but I wanted all of our listeners to know that we love all of you. I find differences. I find people's differences fascinating rather than infuriating. And, you know, I just wanted you all to know that with all of this going on, that we, Tim, Chuck, and I are trying to make, give people a bit of a reprieve, when we sit on here and talk about dumb shit. We're aware of what's happening and it affects us, but we would like to provide some place where people can go and just for a little bit, maybe not have to worry about it.
Yeah. And I think that everybody who wants to talk about, yes, it was wrong, but I want you to put you in a position of put your son's face on that man and tell me that you wouldn't burn down everything in your goddamn path to get justice for it. That's, you know,
absolutely.
That's absolutely what I think about it. So,
okay, so, all right, so now let's talk about Bonnie and Clyde,
dude. I'm sure alrighty. you know this brings to mind to me. You know mm-hmm. what they were. Desperados.
Oh, God.
Why couldn't they come to their senses? They was out riding fences, Timmy, for so long now.
No. Easy Glenn Fry.
Okay,
no.
I'm just saying. That's what came to mind when Timmy was telling me about this. Desperados.
No.
Well, you've heard the story of Jesse James and how he lived and died. If you're still in need of something to read, here's the story of Bonnie and Clyde.
Did you make that up?
No, I did not. This poem was written by Bonnie Elizabeth Parker while her and her beau, Clyde Barrow, were on the run from the law in the early 1930s. They were perhaps the most romanticized pair of criminals in American history until they met the most brutal and imaginable, Brandy. Bonnie and Clyde were a young couple in love, carelessly bouncing from one town to the next, robbing banks, killing police, and becoming media darlings in the process. And by the way,
I love him.
If you, by the way, there's a great movie on
it's Netflix. Called Bonnie and Clyde.
No, it's called The Highwaymen.
The Highwaymen is a great movie.
Yeah, it's not about Bonnie and Clyde. I mean, it's about Bonnie and Clyde, but it's more about Frank Hammer, who was the Texas Ranger who
hunting them.
Yes, tracked them down. Okay, so Bonnie Elizabeth Parker was born in 1910, Brandy, around the same time you were born, in Rowena, Texas.
She was Rowena?
Rowena.
Yeah, no, there's, yeah.
She was the second of three children. Her father, Charles Robert Parker, was a bricklayer. That's kind of rough, isn't it, Colonel, to lay bricks?
Well, you got to be pretty hard to do it, Timmy, and, you know, it can be done.
Pipe.
It can be done. It depends on the hole in the brick and how hard you're going to be, but you can do it.
Well, he died when Bonnie was just 4 years old. Bonnie's widow, widowed mother, Emma Parker, moved her family back to her parents' home in an area known as Cement City, Brandy, which is an industrial suburb of West Dallas, where she worked as a seamstress. If you're not familiar with Dallas, West Dallas is a very poor community. I think it still is. And it's known as, its nickname is the Devil's Back Porch. So it's a rough area where she and also Clyde.
The Devil's Back Door. I've seen that movie, yeah. Timmy.
God.
Yeah. So Bonnie's dream was to become a famous movie star, Brandy, or an award-winning poet.
Well, why not do both?
Well, she was sensitive.
Have you seen pictures of Bonnie, Timmy?
Yeah.
She was as ugly as a bucket of chopped off toes, Timmy. She wasn't going to be no movie star.
She wasn't no Faye Dunaway, that's for sure.
Ugly
as a bucket of chopped off toes.
Mm-hmm.
That is an image. Thank you for that.
Just popped
in
my head.
Yeah, she was not an attractive woman, but she was, both of them were very small. I think she was like 4'11".
Yeah.
And Clyde was like 5'4". I think we get into that. But anyway, she loved to write poetry and would go on to have some of her poems published nationwide in newspapers all over the country when she and Clyde were on the run. Now, their story is very, there's so many crimes that they committed that it's hard. I mean, we'd have to do a 4-hour podcast to mention them all. So,
and we're not above
that, but we're not going to do that today. But
we're just hitting the highlights.
We are just hitting the highlights. And the thing about them is that they had literally no plan. Yeah, you know, there was no method.
Kind of like how we go through life.
Kinda, yeah. And they were pretty inept as in terms of criminals, but they never really got a big score despite robbing banks. But you know, in the movies, of course, they were portrayed as being these amazing bank robbers and such. They were really pretty inept. But anyway, Bonnie's family was poor, and it was a struggle to keep food on the table. In her second year of high school, Bonnie met Roy Thornton. I think he's probably related to Lanny by the descriptions of him, Colonel. Lanny, of course, the man that Brandy will maybe marry in the future. But anyway, mm-hmm. Bonnie met Roy Thornton. The couple dropped out of school and got married on September 25th, 1926. So, yeah, their anniversary is coming up in a few months.
Great.
It was 66 days before her 16th birthday. Your thoughts on that, Brandy?
That's ridiculous. That's fucking ridiculous.
Their marriage was marred by her husband's frequent absences and brushes with the law, and the marriage would prove to be short-lived.
I'm shocked by that.
He outlived her. He was in prison.
I bet.
He was in prison when she died, but he died pretty young, too. I think he was murdered, I think. So, So that's Roy Thornton. She would stay, they would never divorce. And I'll get to that. They never divorced, but their paths never crossed again after January 1929. She was still wearing her wedding ring, Brandy, when she died. Roy Thornton was in prison when he heard of her death, her untimely death.
Hmm.
After the end of their marriage, Bonnie Parker moved with her mother and worked as a waitress in Dallas at a little cafe known as Hargraves Cafe, which, by the way, the cafe is still there. It's not Hargraves anymore. But they're working. A developer has bought it, and they're trying to open it up, put another cafe there in East Dallas, where Hargraves Cafe was. But Clyde Chestnut Barrow was born on March 24th, 1909, into a poor family in Ellis County, Texas, southeast of Dallas. Clyde was the fifth of seven children of Henry Basil Barra and his wife, Cummy.
Cummy. It's
Cummy.
Not Cummy. Jesus fucking Christ. Cummy.
Could be Cummy.
Cummy Talitha. Cummy Talitha Walker, one of my new favorite names ever. Almost as good as Betty Beats.
Well, they were migrant farmers. Well, they owned their own land at first. And then they went broke trying to be they grew cotton and fell on hard times. Then they became sharecroppers, and finally during the Depression right before the Depression, 1920, they moved to the city, where they settled in the urban slum of West Dallas. The Barrows relocated to West Dallas. A part of the town is known as the Devil's Back Porch. It was a dirt poor community, and the family lived under a wagon until they got enough money to buy a tent. Brandy, your thoughts on that?
Well, that is poor. That is very poor.
Well, at least they had a wagon to live under.
That's true. I mean, that's true, but, you know, they had to save to buy a tent.
Well,
that's something.
Well, you know. I thought I was poor living under a wagon until I met a man who didn't have a wagon.
That's right.
That's so profound.
You know what, Timmy? Back in the good days, I lived in a van down by the river, Timmy. Now I live in a tent down by the river. The gravy days, Timmy, when I had a van down by the river. But
Now you're living in a tent.
In a tent.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Clyde's first arrest was in late 1926 at age 17. He ran from the police when...
Speaking of tense, Timmy. You know, when you say Faye Dunaway, for some reason I always think about Jessica Lange. And the moment I think about Jessica Lange, I pitch a tent, Timmy.
Please don't.
Just saying the name right here. Bing. Yep. You can sleep. You can sleep four in there, Timmy.
Why do you think of Jessica Lange when you think of Faye Dunaway? They're two different people.
They're two different people, but they were similar era actresses. And is there really anybody ever been born that's hotter than Jessica Lange?
She was pretty good in Postman.
Oh, don't say that scene in the Postman Always on the dining room table, Timmy.
Please.
Mm. Mm. That is one of the best scenes.
Please stop. Please stop.
That's why he rang twice, Brandy. That's why he rang twice.
Okay. God. Continue, Timmy.
Thank you.
Please don't bring up Jessica Lange again.
Don't worry.
I'm going to need to smoke a cigarette real quick.
I saw that movie when I was... My dad took me to see that. First movie I ever went to was Bonnie and Clyde. Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty, and you know, I think I was in the first grade, and we had show. Yeah, that's what my teacher thought. We had show and tell, and I talked about going to the movies and see Bonnie and Clyde, and you know, my first grade teacher just kind of lost her shit. Like, your parents let you see that? It was a good movie. I thought
it was a
anyway.
Good movie. I seen the car that they were in when they were shot up to me.
Me too. They brought it to my hometown. We'll get into that later. Okay. So Clyde rented a car and didn't turn it in time. And so the police came after him. That was his first arrest in 1926. His second arrest was with his brother, Buck Barrow. Soon after that first occasion, when he was arrested for possession of a stolen turkey. Your comments on that, Brandy?
Wow. Wow. Not just a stolen turkey. Stolen turkeys.
Oh, plural, yeah.
You have possession of many, many stolen turkeys. I don't know. That gives you no street cred in jail. What are you in here for? Yeah, stole some turkeys.
Well, it's interesting you say that because he has problems in jail. Clyde.
I bet he does.
Clyde had some legitimate jobs during 1927 through 1929, but he also cracked safes, robbed stores, and stole cars. I cannot tell you, we're going through this, doing the research on this, how many fucking cars they stole. I mean, it's like they stole like two cars a day. So they had a lot of stolen cars. And they stole a lot of license plates because they kept changing license plates whenever they committed some sort of robbery. Clyde met a 19-year-old Bonnie Barker.
When you're talking about stealing license plates, can I just interject something here, Timmy? Do you know what gave these these ruffians such an advantage. And Cloud was smart in this, and Babyface Nelson and the rest of them. Mm-hmm. Do you know what they would steal?
No.
They was
V8s.
The Ford V8, Timmy, because the police could not catch them if they had the Ford V8.
Yeah.
So they would always steal the Ford V8, and that's how they got away, because, you know, they didn't have the internets back then, Timmy, where the police could just say, hey, you know, you up ahead and there, you know, they just had to try to catch them. And if you had the V8, you couldn't catch them.
And the other thing related to that is that the police could not go across state lines.
Yeah, they had to slam on their brakes right at state lines.
Yeah, if they committed a crime in Texas, they could go across the border to Oklahoma.
Yeah, and that's where they tended to hit those border cities, you know, the ones that they could get away with.
Of course, the law was changed for Bonnie and Clyde and Dillinger and the rest during that era, but that was a real advantage. But speaking of the Ford V8, Clyde was so impressed with the Ford V8 that he always stole that he wrote a thank you letter to Henry Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go on the internet and Google it, you'll see the letter. He wrote a letter to Henry Ford thanking him for making the Ford V8 because he was able to get away. There's so many occasions where they got, you know, they were surrounded by the police and somehow escaped. And a lot of the murders that they've committed, they were 9 total. Most of them were law enforcement. But anyway, Clyde met and married Bonnie Parker. Oh, he met Bonnie Parker through a mutual friend in January of 1930. They were never married. They spent much of their time together during the following weeks. Their romance was interrupted when Clyde was arrested and convicted of auto theft. Now, Clyde was sent to Easton Prison Farm, in April 1930 at the age of 21. He escaped from prison shortly after being incarcerated, using a weapon that Bonnie had smuggled to him. He was recaptured shortly after that and sent to prison. See, Colonel, she was a real woman. She took care of her man.
Damn right she did. She smuggled in a shank and a shank to me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a real woman. That's commitment.
Bonnie and Clyde were short in stature, Brandy. Clyde was 5'4", 5'4", and skinny, and Bonnie was 4'11". Now, being short, Colonel, short and skinny, made Clyde vulnerable in Easton Prison.
Oh, no, Timmy.
You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
Clyde was repeatedly sexually assaulted while in prison.
That.
And we condemn that, Colonel.
We are against that. Even Clyde didn't have that coming. Because actions have consequences, Timmy. And tell me what happened to the man that did this to Clyde.
Well, Clyde retaliated by attacking and killing his tormentor while he was asleep with a lead pipe, crushing his skull.
Mm-hmm.
This was Clyde's first murder. Another inmate who was already serving a life sentence claimed responsibility, so Clyde was never charged with that murder. They had made the arrangement. The guy that he killed had also assaulted this guy that was in for a life sentence, so they made an agreement that if Clyde killed him, the other guy would take responsibility, and he did. So Clyde was never charged with his murder. But Clyde would never forget his time at Easton Prison. In fact, when I said earlier that they didn't really have any kind of plan, they just kind of roamed from town to town and robbed grocery stores. And a lot of times they only got gas money. But The one plan that Clyde did have, and Clyde always had to be in charge. He kind of have a Napoleon complex. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that one plan they did have, he wanted to go in and break out, help prisoners break out of Easton Prison, and they would break into armories and steal weapons for that purpose. And eventually they do that. But, Brandy, tell us about their Bonnie and Clyde's crime spree.
So Timmy, did you... Clyde didn't have to do the hard labor. Why?
Well, let me tell you why. And this takes commitment. And so you gotta give him a thumbs up for this or whatever. But in order to avoid hard labor in the fields, Barrow purposefully had two of his toes chopped off, either by himself or he had another inmate do it in late January of 1932. Commitment.
And you know what they did with those toes, Devil?
Are either of you committed enough to something?
Do you know what they did with those toes? They threw them in a bucket.
Put them in a bucket
with the other toes that people yeah. chopped off.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I would be probably up to that if I was getting sexually assaulted every day.
Well, no, he's trying to avoid hard labor.
Well, yeah.
You know, I
there's
mean,
hard labor and there's hard labor. And I think that,
right,
you know,
well,
one you can.
I prefer just to claim. I prefer just to claim back problems, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Because of this, he walked with a limp for the rest of his life. It was bad timing, though, because Clyde was set free 6 days after his intentional injury. Without his knowledge, his mom had successfully petitioned for his release.
Oh, that's sweet.
So he cut off his toes, and 6 days later, Mama came to get him.
Mommy got him out.
Yeah.
And later on, Bonnie was hurt, and they had a car wreck when they were trying to get away. And she had injured herself. So basically, they both were lame. I mean, not weak, but just lame. Literally lame.
Well, Clyde had a good mama, and I think Merle Haggard said it best to me. Mama tried. Clyde turned 21 in prison, Timmy, doing life without parole. No one could steer him right, but Mama tried. Mama tried.
Oh, my God.
See, people are used to me singing the Bee Gees, but some of our listeners like the old school country.
Yeah.
All right.
How about a little boy named Sue, Colonel?
No, we'll save that one for another episode, Timmy, because it would seem insensitive after Clyde's, you know, unfortunate adventures in prison. Yeah.
Yeah.
That guy may have called him Sue. I don't know.
His sentence at Easton made Clyde bitter, and he vowed vengeance against the guards. Instead of turning over a new leaf, Clyde began a crime spree that would last for 2 years and make him famous around the world.
Yeah, he was famous.
Yeah. After his release from prison, he began robbing grocery stores and gas stations at a rate far outpacing the 10 or so bank robberies attributed to him and the Barrow gang.
I would like to say, he's famous because we're talking about him on this podcast.
Well, yes. Clyde and his gang would...
You have not made it until you've been on our podcast.
Right.
We've talked about
you. Yeah, you're just minor league till you've been on our podcast.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We never mentioned that serial killer from Florida that a lot of people talk about. We haven't mentioned him on our podcast.
The Gainesville Ripper?
No. I'm talking about, you know, TB. I'm not going to say his name. He's not worthy of our podcast.
Oh, yeah. The fake. It wasn't a fake serial killer, but the overhyped serial killer, Timmy.
Exactly. Go ahead, Brandy.
All
continue.
Right. So Clyde and his gang would raid armories throughout the Southwest to further Clyde's plan of attacking Easton Prison and releasing the prisoners there. His favorite weapon was the M1918 Browning Automatic Rifle, or BAR.
Your thoughts on that, Colonel?
It's got a lot of kick to it, Timmy. Got a lot of kick, the old bar does. But it only takes...
other members of the gang preferred the Tommy gun, the Thompson submachine gun.
made here in Newport, Kentucky.
Yep.
Of course it is.
Clyde shot a 45, Timmy. 45 caliber round, Timmy. That's an ugly gun right there.
You got those round. Clyde's, I like the round clips.
Yeah. Made it look cool.
Like, you like, no, you don't give a shit. You just like the way they look. Let's settle down.
Yeah, it looks badass.
All right. So Clyde's gang mostly consisted of Bonnie and guys who Clyde served time in prison with. Later, Clyde's older brother, Buck, and his wife, Blanche, joined the crew. And on April 30th, 1932, Clyde Barrow was the getaway driver in a robbery in Hillsboro, Texas, during which a store owner, J.N. Busher, was shot and killed. Busher's wife identified Clyde from police photographs as one of the shooters, although he had stayed outside in the car. On August 5th, 1932, Clyde Barrow and gang members Raymond Hamilton and Ross Dyer were drinking moonshine at a county dance in Stringtown, Oklahoma, when Sheriff C.G. Maxwell and Deputy Eugene C. Moore approached them in the parking lot. Clyde and Ray Hamilton opened fire, killing Moore and gravely wounding Maxwell. Deputy Moore was the first law officer that Barrow and his gang had killed, and eventually they would murder nine more. During the next 2 years, Bonnie and Clyde made a name for themselves as their crime spree took them from Texas all the way to Minnesota. The makeup of the Barrow gang changed from time to time, with Bonnie and Clyde being the two constants. The gang would steal an unknown quantity of automobiles during their two-year crime spree. They would rob gas stations and grocery stores throughout Texas, Oklahoma, and Missouri. And often, their take would amount to little more than gas money. I don't even understand their fucking point.
Well, those V8s didn't get real good mileage, Devil.
Well, but, you know. So they robbed banks, but they never seemed to get away with much money, and they also never seemed to have a real plan. Again, a lot like us. They just drove from state to state, robbing stores when they got low on cash. Newspapers and True Detective magazines chronicled and sensationalized their exploits. Bonnie and Clyde soon gained celebrity status, and they also became a source of embarrassment for officials in Texas. Throughout their daring run, they managed to avoid being caught despite their celebrity status. Clyde was a romanticized version of a rebellious gangster, and Bonnie was often thought of as his innocent girlfriend, chasing him for love and getting caught up in his lifestyle through no fault of her own.
I will say, I will say about Bonnie is that she never was involved in any of the shootouts. I mean, she was there. And they had a major one. We don't cover very much here, but they had a major one in Joplin, Missouri. Yeah. And if you've seen the movie, you know how that all went down. It was a very horrific shootout with police.
Clyde's brother took one in the eyeball, Timmy.
Yeah, and and he later died. But Bonnie was really, she was there, but she didn't commit any of the crimes. But she was guilty, of course, by association. But she gets blamed for some of the murders. And we'll talk. You go ahead and talk about that.
Well, let's see. In November of 1933, a Dallas grand jury issued a warrant for the arrest of Bonnie and Clyde. One of their gang members, W.D. Jones, had been arrested in Dallas in September and had identified Bonnie and Clyde as perpetrators of several crimes leading to the warrants. A few months later, another warrant was issued, and this time for the murder of two motorcycle cops outside of Dallas. Though Bonnie was often seen as a bystander in the duo's crimes, the Texas murders changed that. A farmer who claimed he'd witnessed the murder grossly exaggerated Bonnie's part in it, claiming that she'd been the one that had been holding the gun, and she had laughed as he died. It's believed now that Bonnie had simply been, as she always was, a bystander.
Yeah, that they had. Just to add to that murder, they were. They would always go back home to West Dallas, and they couldn't drive into their parents' house because they, you know, they were police were watching there. But what they would do is pass word on to their family to meet them out, you know, out of town on the highway, and they were there to meet their family when these two motorcycle cops saw them pulled off the side of the road, thought that they were, you know, they had broken down, and they was going there to help them. And Clyde and one of his other gang members, Clyde often would kidnap police and then turn them loose. And so he told his partner, you know, let's take them. Well, his partner didn't realize what taking them meant. He thought it meant killing them. And so he fired on the police officers, killing both of them. And this is when kind of the before that, people were kind of rooting for Bonnie and Clyde because it was during the Depression. Banks were foreclosing on farms and homes. And so they were robbing banks. So they naturally people, you know, identified with that. And they were kind of rooting for Bonnie and Clyde. But this after this incident, it kind of turned the public against them.
Oh, yeah, I guess. The farmer's account made headlines, and the police in Texas offered a $1,000 reward for the pair's bodies, not their capture. So, Charles, do you want to talk about the ambush?
Yeah, let me tell you about the ambush, because one of the dead police officers was 22-year-old patrolman H.D. Murphy. Now, he was new to the job when he was killed, and Officer Murphy was killed a few days before he was to be married. Now, Murphy's fiance wore her wedding ring and wedding gown. To his funeral.
Wedding gown.
Yeah, wedding ring and a wedding gown.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's got to, you know, that's going to stir up some public sympathy. Now, of course, this was covered in all the newspapers, and the public who had been sympathetic to Bonnie and Clyde turned against them. Now, the police decided to ramp up their efforts. They spent months searching for the pair, as well as an accomplice named Henry Metwin. Now, Henry was from Louisiana, and the gang would hide out when things got too hot in Texas. Isn't it always too hot in Texas? Yeah, yes. It's just, even in December, it's too damn hot in Texas. Now, the police in Louisiana got word that the duo was on their way to Beaverville Parish to hide out. How'd you like to live there? Beaverville Parish. Beaverville. It was in Beaverville.
It is not Beaverville. No, I know.
Beaverville.
Saying it, but that doesn't
matter. Well, that's what the locals called it, Beaverville. Because they had a little ranch down there they set aside, was, you know, back in the day, and had a madam, and it earned the name Beaverville.
What? No, that's not at all what happened.
So but picture the times, what I just told you. The noose was tightening on Bonnie and Clyde.
Picture it, Sicily, 1934.
Beautiful prose there, Timmy. Now, the evening of May 21, 1934, a police posse comprised of six members from the Texas and Louisiana Police Department set up an ambush on the main road into Beaverville. They enlisted...
Will you quit calling it that?
I'm picturing a little sign with a little beaver saying, "Welcome to Beaverville."
Well, I got to tell you, Timmy,
I think it's Blaineville.
On the script, I got my font set to low so I can see 10 things at once. And it's looks like Beaverville to me. Anyway.
Yeah, it's close.
They enlisted.
It's close.
Metvin's father, whom Bonnie and Clyde were familiar, to wait on the side of the road as a distraction. Now, the posse waited for Bonnie and Clyde the entire night. So the next day, you know, it was hot there. They was grumpy. They didn't have no coffee. They was peeing in the woods, sleeping in tents.
Yeah, and he had his car jacked up like he was changing a tire.
Yeah, Well, then, as they were about to give up, the duo arrived. Timmy, at 9:15 a.m., the posse got their first look at Bonnie and Clyde, speeding down the back road at 85 miles an hour in the now infamous Ford V8 that we have previously talked about. Now, upon seeing his father, they parked on the side of the road and pulled over. Then, before Bonnie and Clyde had time to exit, the police officers neither identified themselves or gave them a chance to give up. They just opened fire. Now, Clyde was killed instantly by a shot to the head. And one of the officers recounted hearing Bonnie scream as she realized he was dead. Officers emptied their entire supply of ammunition into the car, firing 167 rounds in all. Which, when you think about it, if I'm going to take on Bonnie and Clyde, I'm going to bring more than 167 rounds of ammunition with me. Now,
well, I don't think they needed more than 100.
Well, you never know. After the death of Bonnie and Clyde, researchers have found that each was shot more than 50 times. More than 50. Think about that. They were shot more than 50 cents. Even though the official coroner's report at the time said Bonnie sustained 26 wounds and Clyde 17, the undertaker reported that he had difficulty embalming the bodies due to the number of bullet holes they was leaking.
Oh, my God. Can you imagine?
Yeah, the embalming fluid just
duct tape
them. They look like, you know, one of those things on Wile E. Coyote where he just leaking all over the place.
You just got to have to duct tape them shut.
Now, the scene of Bonnie and Clyde's death quickly descended into chaos with local looters trying to get a piece of the gangsters before the coroner arrived. One man tried to cut off Clyde's ear. Another took pieces of Bonnie's blood-stained dress. By the time the authorities came to remove the bodies, there was a growing crowd full of people trying to get in on the action. Now, though Bonnie had been...
Keep it classy, Beaverville.
Yeah, right. Though Bonnie and Clyde had been quite the team in life, in death they were unceremoniously separated. Though they had wished to be buried together, Bonnie's family wouldn't allow it. They would not allow it. Demon seed like Clyde to be next to her. Now, both bodies are buried in Dallas, Texas, but in separate cemeteries.
They are 9 miles apart, and the surviving member of Bonnie's family, I think it's her niece, she's like 70 some years old, and the surviving member of Clyde's family, who is also 70-some years old, are now petitioning to get them buried.
Well, that's down there towards the bottom.
Yeah. I'm just sharing it now.
You're just jumping ahead.
Mm-hmm. But they're trying to get them buried together.
Well, more than 10,000 mourners attended Bonnie's funeral. Clyde only drew 5,000. He was kind of the B criminal in the group.
He wasn't as popular as Bonnie.
No, he was like the Oates of the Hall and Oates, you know.
Uh-huh.
Bonnie was Hall.
He's Ringo.
So,
but you couldn't have Bonnie without Clyde.
No.
That's my feeling.
No, you couldn't. But Clyde didn't get the credit he deserved. Now, the couple's famous Ford V8, dubbed the death car, made its rounds nationwide for years after the death of Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah, I saw it at a bank in Portsmouth.
Yeah, I just saw it. It's up at a place in Indiana right now. There's a small little...
Well, why don't you read ahead, Colonel? Okay. And
riddled with bullet holes and blood stains, it was a popular tourist attraction, and it was displayed at fairs, amusement parks, flea markets for almost 40 years before it settled at Whiskey Pete's Hotel and Casino in Prim, Nevada.
Wouldn't you like to go to a flea market where you could see Bonnie and Parker?
Car. I love me a good flea market.
Mm-hmm.
Alongside the brutal photos of Bonnie and Clyde's death scene, the car serves as a haunting reminder of the bloody end of two of American history's most infamous outlaws. In 2018, relatives of both Bonnie and Clyde began a GoFundMe, effort to reinter Clyde's remains in a grave next to Bonnie. Bonnie and Clyde's demise were eerily predicted in one of Bonnie's poems. Someday, Someday they will go down together. They will bury them side by side. To few it will be grief. To the law, a relief. But it's the death for Bonnie and Clyde.
All right. And so, Brandy, what's your final thoughts on Bonnie and Clyde?
You know, that's live by the sword, you die by the sword.
I don't think they had swords back then, Brandy. did you read it?
I think they actually did have swords.
Colonel, did you hear us mention swords throughout this podcast?
I didn't hear one mention of a sword. I don't know where she gets that from, Timmy.
Colonel, your final thoughts on the death of Bonnie?
Well, you know, it was the Depression back then. Times were hard. You know, man got to make a living somehow, Timmy. Didn't have to shoot the policeman away. But,
Well, why did he think he cut off his toes?
He cut off his toes because, I think he cut off his toes to make himself uglier to the other men in prison, Timmy.
Might be the case.
It could be.
All right. We would like to thank all of the wonderful people who support us on Patreon. If you would like to support us on Patreon, just go to patreon.com/historydweebs. History Dweebs, all one word. And you can make a donation to ensure that this fine podcast continues. And we would like to give a shout out to those who have so generously contributed to the podcast. So take it away, Colonel.
Yes, we would like to thank Andrea, Louise Siddons, Tessie Poor, Katie Byer, Danielle Townsend, Marianne Knight, Adam McWaters, Elaine Baker, Alexandra Alley, Alicia Mincy, the already gone podcast, Timmy, with the lovely Nina that we had previously spoken of. Amanda Chris.
She doesn't swear on that podcast.
She doesn't. And have we announced this, Timmy? You have a podcast, a wonderful podcast, Dead Ball, that Nina will be doing.
She will. So she's going to be the voice of Dead Ball. So excited about that.
If you want to hear great baseball stories by a great host, listen. It's Dead Ball. Now, Amanda Christine. Amber Anderson, Amber Scoville, Anna Gerline, Andrea Odell, Andrew Frazier, Angelo Santos, Angelo Villapane, Anna Garrett, Annette Petre, Anon, Becky Trainer, Ben Dobrovich, Brandy McBride, Bridget Bernard, Brittany Irvin Martin, of course, the Bloody Murder Podcast with Barney and Tara.
Tara, yes. Very, very
Kelly,
funny.
Kelly Jones.
We haven't heard from Kelly for a while. Kelly, if you're out there.
I think she's kind of forsaken. I think she's kind of forsaken Facebook a little bit, Timmy. I think she just had it.
I can understand that.
Yeah, I think she just had enough of that. Where was I at, Timmy? Kelly Jones, okay. Oh,
Kelly Jones.
Our favorite Canadian, Christy Lee in Canadian True Crime. Carl Asplund.
Another great podcast.
She does have a big podcast. Carol Elise. Charlie from Crime Lines, another fantastic podcast.
Absolutely.
Cheryl LeBlanc, Chris Lane, Christine Howell, Cindy Clark, and Diane Trowbridge. Who just...
Now, see, I can see Clark and Diane as Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah. Yeah, I could.
But I think that Diane would be much more active in the killing than Bonnie Parker was.
See, now, I could see them as the anti-Bonnie and Clyde. I could see Clark and Diane as a duo, a bounty hunter pair, basically, going out and capturing Bonnie and Clyde.
Crime fight.
Oh, you want them to be dog.
No, and Clark and Diane would be that couple that just drove around the country, stopping, helping people change tires, you know. Remember exactly the CVS Good Samaritan van? Do they still have that, Timmy? I haven't seen it. I think somebody might have kidnapped the driver and stolen the van, and they gave it up or something. But let's see. The Comeback Podcast, Daniel Bissett, Diane Student, Erica Kinney, Aaron Turner, Fiona Crisp, Gina Green, Jay Cleveland Payne, Jahara Lopez, Jamie Dent, Iroh, Jason Dykes, Jeff and Don Chestnut. Be great to see them again.
Bonnie and Clyde.
Yeah. That's a Bonnie and Clyde couple right there. Jennifer Orcutt, Jennifer Svoboda, Jess Warford, Jessica Greeno, Julia Rodriguez, Cam Bonds, Kelly Charette, Kim Stroop, Kimberly Smith, Christine Malachinsky, Laura O'Reilly, Lydia Fisher, Maja, Marsha Boris, Marie, Markia Smith, Mary Courtney Sheldon, Melissa Montoya, Michelle Johns, who we hope and pray is doing well. She did her last, she's done in the COVID unit now, Timmy.
She's done in the
COVID
unit.
Yes, she is.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you to all of our nurses and
the
doctors.
Pleasing Terrors Podcast. Let's see. Robin Sherrard, Ron Monasterio, Ruth Whitfield, Sarah Bloom, Charlene, Shannon Arnold, Shirley Strapp, Stacey Alsop, Stephen Potts, Terry Stratford, The Vanish Podcast, Timmy. And when you get into the podcast, in the heavy hitters, we already hit a couple of them. They walk among us, Timmy. They walk among us.
Our good friend, they got a new season coming out.
Yes, they do.
And good friends in Arizona.
They're basically a media empire right now, a media conglomerate. They wrote a book.
They are.
Ben appears on TV shows from time to time.
I'm telling you, they're like Roy Rogers and Dale Evans.
No, they're like the Jim and Tammy Faye.
Yes.
Of true crime, Timmy.
Oh my God.
Yeah, they're everywhere and famous. I mean, they're the top names.
They are.
And
they
true
are.
Crime. So Todd Long, Tommy Lane, Leanne Flanagan, Timmy. The lovely Leanne Flanagan, and I figured out her occupation. If anybody wants to send me an email or send me some clues, I think I figured it out. Tracy Smith, but if I say it on the radio, she'll have to kill me. Tracy Smith, Viv, Rebecca L., Jen Lee, Alan Cox, Whitney James, Rudy the Wonder Dog, and Bo said to tell you he's 1 year old now. He's old enough to become a sponsor, become a Patreon, so he's getting ready to sign up.
Does he have a credit card yet?
He applied for one, and he's waiting to hear back. Rudy had to co-sign for him.
I see.
And the woman we do this show for week after week after week, Dottie, we're sorry we didn't go into more graphic detail about every killing they had. But we hope you get the overall gist of this, and we hope you're doing well. The lovely Dottie Scott.
All right.
And Patreon sponsors, we are at 99 sponsors. So if you want to be the 100th sponsor of our show, you could just find us on Patreon, History Dweebs. It's all one word if you do the search. And you could be the 100th sponsor of our show.
Yes, it's patreon.com/historydweebs, all one word.
And we apologize. Right, we appreciate you staying with us for the first 10 minutes as we address the first 20 minutes as we address these events and some very... I don't even like to say this, but some very coherent and well thought out statements from the devil. That surprises me.
Yeah.
Even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
So we appreciate all of you listening. It's troubled times out there right now. Stay safe. Take care of each other. And that's it. And come back next week.
Okay, thank you for joining us, everyone. We'll see you next time on History Dweebs. Bye, everyone.
Good day.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.